afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Authors on the Air. I'm your host, Pam Stack. We are proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I am trying very hard to remind everyone when new books are out. There are just a ton of good books, but I always ask for you, please send me a note on Facebook. I'm glad to announce your books and tell you who's new and exciting. I want to just mention that my friend Paul Marx has a new book out called Broken Windows. And my interview right before this one was with Dieter Kaltes, who has a new book called Poughkeepsie Shuffle. And it was a ton of fun. My guest right now is a woman who lied on her Facebook page and on her bio and said she's been writing for 40 years. There's no way, because when you look at her picture, I'm certain she's 28. Even though she told me she has a child who's 24, I think she adopted him when she was 5. She's written 33 books. She has a couple of different cozy series and women's fiction. I am thrilled to welcome to my show best-selling author Laura Bradford. Laura, welcome to Authors on the Air, finally. How are you?
I am good. Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled
to be here.
So I guess we should kind of clarify by saying that you did start writing on blank paper with a box of crayons. So, you know, but 40 years worth of telling stories, whether they were in your childhood self or your adult self, you always knew what you wanted to do. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's just fell in love with words and creating stories and escaping into and creating another world, I guess, at the age of 10. And since that time, other than being a mom, there's nothing else I've ever really wanted to do.
And you've made all of those dreams come true. You are a best-selling author. You have tons and tons of books here, and I don't even know how to go and find all of them except to scroll through pages and pages and pages on Amazon. So let's start off with your new release, which is part of your Amish series, Portrait of a Sister, although this is a standalone book, correct?
Yes, it's my first women's fiction novel, actually.
It's you have a series set in Amish country. Why?
Well, I was one of those kids that one of my early reads that I read multiple times as, I guess, through my middle school age, elementary, middle school years was the Little House on the Prairie series. And I was always just kind of fascinated by people who lived the way they did in the 1800s. And if you visit Amish country, that's very much the way they live, only they're doing it with the modern world around them. And
yes.
I find that fascinating. So, and they were a perfect backdrop for mysteries. And then I decided to take it into the area of women's fiction as well.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people know that Little House on the Prairie, just by the television show, if that's their only point of reference, understand that was in Amish country. It's interesting to me that you mentioned that. I think that we have a lot of misperceptions about a lot of history based on television, which is wrong. You have a picture in an Amish wagon that is generally pulled by horses. Do you visit Amish country?
I do. Before I write every book, I spend usually 3-4 days in Lancaster in Pennsylvania, and I spend, go into some of the homes, some of the Amish homes via a tour, and I always go in with just no real idea of what I want to do, but somehow during each trip I learn some little nugget of their life that I find to be fascinating that I then am able to build a story around. So it is a lot of fun.
So you actually walk in your character's footsteps. You go where your characters live, and there you are.
I do. I think that's the best way to make it feel real for my readers, to be able to – a lot of people aren't familiar with the Amish, and so it's kind of fun to take them into that world and teach them a little bit about their customs. I think in society when there's groups of people that we don't understand, it sometimes it's easier to just kind of make stuff up, and I work really hard to give people a real look at what the lives of Amish are like, how they live, why they live the way they live, and it's fun.
What would we be surprised to know about the Amish that most people don't know?
Oh, wow. Oh, that's interesting. Oh, there's so many things. I think one of a really fun little tidbit that I learned that I actually incorporate into the next mystery, Just Plain Murder, that will be out at the end of November, is that in their districts, you know, their church services every other Sunday, their district is made up usually of about 10 to 15, maybe as much as 20 families, but that's on the high end. And there is, there's ministers and there's a bishop, and the ministers of the church are selected by lot. That is not something that they volunteer for or they train for. By part of baptism, they agree that if they're called to serve, they will serve. It's not necessarily something that they want to do because, you know, they have their own jobs and this is an extra commitment. But what they'll do is they'll ask the district for some recommendations of people they think would make a good minister. They'll get three or four names, and then they will gather those people that have been recommended, and they will hand out songbooks. And when these three or four people open up their songbook, if they happen to have the book with a scripture written on it and a small piece of paper, guess what? You are the minister now for life.
For life.
Very, very, for life.
Wow.
Yeah.
How
it's
interesting.
Very interesting.
How
yeah.
do the ministers ever move up to become bishops, or are those
yes.
people who have, they do. Okay. So
they
are
do.
These
they
are lay
can.
People. These are lay
yes.
people who
lay
are
people.
Can rise to the rank. Mm-hmm. So interesting. I never knew that. Do the Amish have their own, I'm not sure how to say it, dialect, way of speaking, words that are not words we use in our vocabulary on a daily basis?
Sure. A lot of them speak German in the home, or Pennsylvania Dutch in the Lancaster area that they speak in their homes. And also in the schools, however, in the schools in America, they also learn English. They call us the Englishers, and they,
really?
Of course, are the Amish. Yes, we are considered called the English.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting to me. When you go to do your research, are you welcomed? Do people answer your questions willingly?
They do. I think sometimes that's another thing. I think people think of the Amish as kind of being closed off. But because one of the things that's happened with the Amish population, they double every 20 years, is that they are running out of farmland, which is why they are now have moved out into almost every state in the country at this point. But because they can't all farm, they have to do, many of them have to do other things to earn money. And that requires them having businesses that has them having to deal with us, the Englishers. So they've become more open, I think, to us. As long as you're respectful and you respect the fact they don't want their pictures taken and you don't ask necessarily an inappropriate question or challenge their beliefs, they're fine. They're happy to answer questions. So.
Wow. I'm always, I shouldn't be, but I'm always humbled by how much I don't know and how interested, how fascinating it is by the things I learn from my guests. Let's talk first about Portrait of a Sister, because this is a women's fiction story.
Yes.
When you portray romance, Amish romance, it's different than it is when you're mm-hmm. doing a conventional type women's romance story and all. Tell us the story of Katie.
Basically, we follow Katie. She's a young Amish woman, and the crux of the book is that she grapples with making a life choice that will either allow her to follow her dream at the cost of losing everything else in her world, or she can keep her world the way she knows it, but in order to do that, she has to give up on her dream. She has an artistic talent that she's kind of discovered, kind of cultivated in secret, where she is able to draw pictures that are basically photograph quality in terms of face. And that's not okay with the Old Order Amish. It's against their belief system. They see it as a graven image, and therefore it's against the Bible. So if this is found out as a baptized Amish person, as Katie is, she could be shunned. And she, you know, that's something that she doesn't want to have happen. But she is a twin sister, and her twin sister, who left the Amish before baptism and now lives in New York City, kind of goes behind Katie's back and shows Katie's drawings to somebody in the art world in New York City. And her talent kind of is forced out in front of people. And Katie kind of is excited about what that means, but also terrified, because while that's exciting to have, you know, her artwork celebrated and noticed and people wanting to purchase what she's written or what she's drawn, if she does that, if she follows that world, she has to give up her life as Amish. And because she's been baptized, if she were to leave now, she has to lose all ties to her Amish family, no communication. And that's a heck of a choice, to literally choose between your dream and your family and everything and everyone you've ever known.
Yeah. Now, I'm assuming this is based on truth, okay? This is facts.
Mm-hmm.
If she were to leave before she was baptized, would she still have contact with her family?
Yes, she could, and that's the twin sister left before baptism. And she can have communication with the family, but as most Old Order families, if you've chosen to be baptized and made that commitment, then you can't then leave and keep your family. It's quite a decision, and
it sure is. What a dilemma.
Yeah,
portraiture of any type, capturing faces, is not permitted, no matter what.
Right. Of a human face, of their faces, they don't. Yeah, they're not allowed.
I knew about the photos.
No, they know we take pictures sometimes. They see people, but they don't necessarily care what's put out into the world. They're separate from that, but they won't pose for a picture. They don't want their pictures taken. They're not going to engage in that. So, yeah.
Right. I understand. Very interesting. And quite the dilemma you pose in this book, you know, I don't know that I've never had to choose between family and doing something I wanted to do. And I would imagine that's one of the most difficult things that any human being would have to choose, is, you know, family or passion. And wow. So how is this book different from your Amish mystery series?
The mystery, it's interesting because the Amish mystery series, I have a detective in that book who did leave after baptism and to pursue law enforcement. And he therefore has lost ties with his family. And we see the pain that gives him. But at the same respect, it's a mystery. So I can, work with that, but the focus is still the mystery. And I've always kind of wondered, what would that be like, you know, in terms of digging deeper, which is why I ended up wanting to write this women's fiction book, is really get into that choice that they have, really, at such a young age, to make that decision at 18, 19 years old, a lifelong decision.
Right. So what happens, I want to go back to the mystery series. Are you saying that if there is a crime, this former Amish man, detective, goes to Amish country to investigate it? Now, is there a crime in the Amish community? I mean, I really just don't know, you know, that much
Absolutely.
About it.
They're kind of ripe for crime. sadly,
crimes against them.
Crimes against them, but they also, I mean, they're humans, so they too do
right.
things wrong, just like any other group of people. There's always, you know, the bad apples, the bad seeds in every group. In terms of against them, crimes against them, well, one, they're apprehensive about police in general, regardless of the fact that this man had been one of them at one time.
Tell me why.
Well, they're passive, and they are.
Oh, okay.
They just don't believe in weapons being used to take people's lives, and they just that's really the crux of what they have against the police. They don't take pictures of themselves, so if an Amish child were to go missing, that's a problem. We can't splash their picture
wow.
up on
yeah.
billboards with Amber Alerts. They very often, not all, but very often, keep large sums of money in their homes. So that makes them ripe for home invasions. They really are kind of sitting ducks in a lot of ways. They also aren't supposed to have telephones in their homes. So, you know, when we see mystery novels, you know, we're all, especially these days, it's like we expect the protagonist to pick up the telephone or use the computer,
sure.
and these folks really don't. So it's kind of like writing a mystery, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, which is kind of fun.
Wow. Yeah, I could see that. That's interesting to me. Now, you have other series, too. You have Culinary Cozies, which
mm-hmm.
I love. Anything Culinary
yeah.
Cozy, to me, is a ton of fun. But you have one called Jenkins and Burns Mysteries. Tell me about that series, please.
That series is what started me out. I wrote my first book, which the original title was called Jury of One. It took me 5 years to write that book because my youngest was a baby and crawling around, and I would write in 20-minute increments during, you know, quiet time where she was otherwise occupied. And I sent that off to what was then a small press publisher, and they sent it back and said they kind of liked it, but they felt that I needed more depth with the characters. And, you know, as a new writer, you think your stuff is perfect, and it took me a little while to be able to step back and see what they were saying. And when I did, I worked on it and gave it some more layers and sent it back, and they went ahead and took the book. And it ended up being an Agatha nominee in 2000, well, it was for the 2005 books, but it was at the 2006 Mouse Domestic Conference. I did not win, but I was nominated.
Congratulations.
And that little,
that's
thank
huge.
You, that little book did okay for itself, and there were two more books after that in that series. And then I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and I'm doing great, but it was that made me kind of look at my dream and say, you know what, I've always wanted to be in with a New York publishing house. That has really been my dream. And so I stopped that series and took a chance on myself. And 28, 29 books later, yeah, I have with New York houses. So it happens. And it just took a lot of hard
dreams
work.
Dreams do come true. I have
yeah.
learned that. Dreams do come true.
Yeah.
Tell me who Toby Tobias is.
Toby Tobias. Oh, she's fun.
Yeah.
It is a series set in advertising with Lyrical Press, which is an imprint of Kensington. And she's just this young girl who has a dream, kind of like I did as a writer. And she didn't really like the corporate advertising world and the games that were played. So she opened up her own small agency. And she's surrounded by a crazy cast of characters that have been such fun to write. And, you know, she comes up with these slogans, and at least in the first book, Death in Advertising, the slogan ends up being a blueprint for murder that she has to solve to save her business. So, yeah, I love that character. She's great fun.
Now, is that series finished, the Toby Tobias series finished, or will you go back to her?
It's a possibility. It's always open. She talks to me sometimes in my head, and, you know, there's always a possibility that she may demand a fourth book, so we shall see.
And you have
you have
a standalone book, too, don't you? Storybook Dad is your standalone?
Oh, I had some romances along the way while I was writing mysteries. I kind of did a couple of romances for Harlequin. Storybook Dad
Fun.
Was one where it actually had a main character who had MS, and that was that was a really heavy book to write for myself. That was the last romance I wrote, but it's a special book for me. So
I bet
yeah,
that
I haven't
was
written
cathartic
any more romances,
for you.
So.
That was probably very cathartic for you.
Yeah,
to write that book, and probably necessary. Now, I've been looking at your reviews, and almost across the board, you have 5 stars. It's very unusual to find a book that isn't a 5-star book in your reviews. Congratulations for all of your success and your accolades. How did you deal with having to read reviews when you first were published?
Well, that was hard. It's still hard. It's still hard when you come across one that's just, just kind of throws you for a loop. And I spoke to a friend of mine who's far more along in the publishing world than I am. And his advice to me was to think of the book that I absolutely love to read, my very favorite book in the world. Go to Amazon, read the reviews for that book, and I will see that even those authors or that author has their share of ones or twos, and it happens to everyone. And I think once I saw that, I've been able to handle it better. Plus, there's times where I just don't want to look.
Well, I'm glad that that's a really good point. I never thought about that, but something, you're right. Some of my favorite books panned, and I'm stunned by that. And some very well-known authors, even through the ages, of the very first very famous writers. Amazon is both a blessing and a curse because they ask for reviews. So, so let me ask you a question that I just recently have started asking some of my guests. I read a lot. I read a lot in a lot of different genres. And generally, when I go to the bookstore, I will buy both hardcover and paper, whatever the book happens to be in. So I've supported my author that I like or supported an author by purchasing their book. Am I now obligated to support you again by writing a review?
I think it's great if you can. If you like a book, especially in this day and age, for some reason the reviews seem to be more important, at least that's what we're told. If you really like a book, I think that's great if you can. I'm just thrilled if somebody likes my book and maybe tells a friend that reads, hey, I read this book the other day. It was really, really good. I think word of mouth in any form is positive, spreading the word of books, because it is hard. I'm established as a cozy writer, but Portrait of a Sister being women's fiction, in some ways it's like I'm starting over. Some of my cozy readers gave it a shot because it's mine, and they ended up, and there are a lot of the reviews on Goodreads for that book said, this is not my genre, but I gave it a try, and I ended up absolutely loving it. Can't wait for the next book, which I love seeing. But I still have women's fiction readers to find me. So it is like starting over. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think, as I say, that's like the good and the bad of Amazon. I wish that they went by sales numbers versus by reviews. I think it would be less competitive. I was sitting at a conference listening to women talk about how they paid someone to $25 for 40 reviews or something. That's horrible.
Yeah, for me, I don't know.
I mean, there are times, when I've not liked a book, not because the story was bad, it just structurally needed a little bit of help. And I'd rather reach out to the author personally and go to their website and say, you had a great story here, and this is where it fell apart for me, because I think that's constructive. But I don't feel like I can do that on Amazon, because that, points against. I wish Amazon wouldn't force people to base, or wouldn't put your book in front of others based on reviews, because it hardly seems fair. It's just some people are not review people, and some genres they're not reviewers, and that's unfortunate. you know. Right. So let me ask you this. You must have had mentors along the way when you began your career, other writers who gave you advice. What is the best piece of advice you ever got in your writing career?
Read. Yep. In genre or out of your genre, just read, because that's how you you learn to see new ways of doing things, ways that work, ways that don't. You're more aware of the things that really kind of touch you. It's nice to escape into someone else's world a little bit.
Yeah.
And write every day. Is just sit down and make yourself write. I've never been a big fan of the how-to writing books. I know it works for a lot of writers, but for me, it's more of, I want to just sit down and write. That's how I'm going to learn, is by doing it. So that's
do
been,
you
that's
have
been,
a
yeah.
Do you have an interest in writing in any other genre or changing it up again?
Well, I'm really excited about women's fiction, and I still love the cozies. So, but I have an idea for a thriller novel one day. So we'll see. It's always kind of percolating in the back, and I've written it, but it's not strong enough to be put in front of anyone yet. So maybe one day at some point.
But you're
I'd like
right,
to get
mystery.
Back to it.
So you know, even though it's a cozy, the leap is there, and it's definitely doable.
Yeah.
You know, leaping from one roof to the other, I can see how that would happen. You've got, obviously, the writing chops for it and story and so on. You feel it's not ready, so you need to refine it more, you think?
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. It just, thriller writers, that's just a different way of writing.
It's a whole new genre. I agree with
it
you.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, yeah. Who do you read when you're in your downtime?
Well, I've been reading a lot more women's fiction lately, just to kind of get a feel. So I've been reading Sophie Kinsella, Kristen Higgins. In terms of mystery, I absolutely love Linda Castillo. I think she is amazing.
She is.
She really, wow. I when her book comes out, literally on day one in July, whatever, I have it circled on my calendar, and I'm at Barnes & Noble that day buying it.
Wow.
I love Harlan Coben. He's another one that I read extensively. So
those
are probably, I mean, there's a lot of people I read. I like, you know, I have some friends that write. I enjoy my friend Lynn Cahoon's books. I love to read, and I usually do it when I'm at the gym, because that's my only way to stay on the elliptical machine is to read my way through it.
How interesting is that? That's so funny. What are you working on now?
Right now, I'm getting ready to write the next Amish mystery that'll be out in 2019. Wow, I can't believe we're talking about that. And then I'm going into the next, to a third Amish mystery that'll be out in 2020, because I have a second Amish, women's fiction, I'm sorry. There's already one that's done, and, you know, just going through the final editing process and the covers being made, and I've seen a sneak peek, and that book will come out in May, called A Daughter's Truth, and I'm really excited about that book.
My goodness. When you're not writing and engaging with your family and reading, do you have other hobbies that you like to do, Laura?
I like to hike. I like to be outside. I love pictures. I love looking at pictures. I do enjoy taking them. I don't have any fancy camera, but I do like to take pictures. I just need to have more time to get out there and actually do it. I think it's another way of showing somebody something, kind of like writing.
Yes.
You can create a world with words. I think you can also create a world in some ways you tell a story with a picture, and I've always been fascinated
by that. You're a creative type, so that makes sense to me. Do any of your children have that creative spark, any of the DNA from you?
My almost 24-year-old, she wants to be an actress, and she is auditioning all the time in New York City. So she got the acting bug, not the reading bug, the acting bug.
She'll be doing plenty of reading if she's got the acting bug, that's for sure.
She likes to read plays more than she likes to read books, but yeah.
Okay. When she, when someone says go read the book and figure out why this play came from, then she'll learn to read, right?
Right.
My nephew is the same way and just about the same age, and so he's finishing up his I don't even remember, almost last year of college for his theater program, and he studied in Europe and he's in New York all the time. So, you know, it's not an easy occupation, but as long as they're educated, you know, and they want to do it and they have the passion, good luck. I think it's great. You know, I have no idea where that came from in his, in that part of the family. There certainly are not creative people on that side, you know.
Yeah. Wow.
We're more thinkers. Yeah. How wonderful. I want to ask you to please tell everyone that where they can find you on the webs, please.
My website, first and foremost, laurabradford.com. All my books. I have some really fun pictures on there, too. Some book club questions for Portrait of a Sister, some of my favorite stores. I'm on Facebook. I have an author page, and they'll know it's the right page because the profile picture is of me sitting in an Amish buggy. I am on Instagram as Laura Bradford Author and Twitter occasionally as Bradford Author. So,
yeah,
I have to
encourage everyone to go to Laura's page and especially look at the photos. You have a thing about sea lions, don't you?
I really like
sea lions. And there's also just a really cute picture of you dressed as a sassy gangster. That's one of my favorite pictures to look at. I almost used it in the promo, and I thought, oh, she'll kill me. But and there was one really spectacular picture, and I'm sure you were cray-cray about it. You got to meet the great Mary Higgins Clark, didn't you?
I did. It was a fun story. 2005, I had been to a writer's conference, Magna Cum Laude, in Indiana.
Right.
It was one of my first conferences. And Harlan Coben was the guest of honor. And I wasn't really familiar with him. It was just after Tell No One comes out. And he'd heard me on a panel say, I loved Mary Higgins Clark. And he came over to me shortly after and asked me, you know, if that was true. Was Mary Higgins Clark really an inspiration for me? And I said, yes. And he asked me if I'd like to talk to her. And again, I had no idea who he was. So I was just kind of looking at him like, yeah, well, of course. And he pulls out his cell phone and he called her. And I got to speak to her on the telephone. And she asked me about my book, and my second Jenkins and Berg book was coming out at that point. So I got to talk to her. And then a couple of years later, I got to meet her in person at Malice Domestic.
At Malice.
And I said to her, and I said, I don't know if you remember me, but I spoke to you on the phone. She said that she did. She signed the book of hers, that A Cry in the Night, which is one of the books that really sparked me into writing mysteries. And she signed, I think, Royalty Checks, which I have in a very special place on my shelf. And, you know, that particular weekend, every time that poor woman and her daughter were in an elevator and the doors opened up, I seemed to be on the other side of the elevator. She had to think I was a complete stalker.
The stalker, right?
But it was a fun memory. I was a total fangirl. So,
good for you. Yeah, I see the picture of you on the phone with Harlan Coben. That's so funny in the background, kind of, you know, just saying, huh. How about that? Very cool. Dreams do come true, don't they?
They do. And you know what? And that's one of the things, you know, along the way, is that there's some authors out there in many genres that are just so giving in that they're willing to answer questions and, you know, kind of give you some advice along the way if you ask for it. And they really make a difference when you're kind of climbing your way up, and I'm very appreciative for those authors.
Where are you going on book tour and when?
Well, I wrapped up my book tour with Portrait of a Sister in July, but I am getting ready to go out down to Houston to Murder by the Book on December 4th with the next mystery. And I'm back at Aaron's Books in Lititz, Pennsylvania with that book in December also. And then when A Daughter's Truth, the next women's fiction, comes out in May, I'm already kind of setting things up to get back out there with that book and meet new readers.
I am so thrilled that you came on my show today. I'm very honored to have you here. It has been a joy to speak to you, and I wish you all the best with your
Thank
women's
you so
fiction
much.
And all of your books. My goodness gracious, all of them. You're just fantastic. I still think you're lying about your age, but I'm letting it go because you're just so delightful. And I hope you'll come back sometime. Maybe you'll call Harlan Coben and tell him you want to interview him. You could be the host and he can be your guest.
Oh, that would be awesome.
I will, you know, that offer is open to you anytime you want. I will make a studio available. Okay?
That would be great. So anyway, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with me, Laura. And thank you, listeners, for being with Laura Bradford and I today. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Have a good afternoon, everyone. And be safe, South Carolinians and North Carolinians. I want you all to be safe from the storm. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.